A new year is full of surprises, but one thing is always predictable. Postage costs go up. Stamps.com gives you crazy discounts of up to 89% off USPS and UPS services. So when postage goes up, your business will barely notice the change. Stamps.com is like your own personal post office, wherever you are. You can even take care of orders on the go with the mobile app. No lines, no traffic, no waiting. Schedule package pickups, automatically find the cheapest and fastest shipping options, and seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. There's even a supply store where you can stock up on mailing supplies, labels, even printers. Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses just like yours. All you need is a computer or phone and printer. Take a chunk out of your mailing and shipping costs this year with Stamps.com. Sign up with promo code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com code PROGRAM.
Are we allowed to enjoy this?
Peter Mahoney is literally an opposition scrum half's nightmare.
People say I refereed lots of matches when I actually played.
The Red 78 with Alan Quinlan and Niamh Briggs. Subscribe to the Rugby Channel on the OTB Sports app and turn on your notifications now.
OTB AM
with Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's move.
Sometimes all it takes is a new manager and all of a sudden everything's right in the world. You're very welcome along to Wednesday's OTB AM. It's Jerry Owen with you all the way through until 10 this morning. We will, of course, be talking about the brand new era that started at Manchester United last night.
Mm-hmm.
What a stunning 2-0 performance. Always in control, never needed the goalkeeper to rescue anything for them, and away we go. Give it to Carrick till the end of the season.
The first English manager to win his first game for Manchester United since Walter Crickmer, who took charge of the club from 1937 to 1945. Of course, there have only been like 3 or 4 English managers in the entire history of Manchester United Football Club since then, but still, what a historic start for Michael Carrick.
When you think about it, it's kind of weird, isn't it?
Yeah, just got a huge affinity for Scottish people, basically, United, and nothing wrong with that. They brought some great success.
No, I mean, look, it's a very interesting football culture when it comes to producing world-class managers.
Yeah, so Wilf McGuinness, Dave Sexton, Ron Atkinson, they all managed to not achieve what Michael Carrick achieved last night, which was winning his first game as United boss.
I mean, look, Carrick is proving to be a better manager than he was a footballer.
Here we go. I'm interested to get Nathan's take on this morning. I mean, this is something that you've volunteered to wade into, Nathan, because this was yesterday's show, basically.
I volunteered to wade into, have I? on what? Michael Carrick, his greatness as a player?
Yeah.
I always thought Michael Carrick was a nice player, but I don't think they'd ever have called him a great player. I don't think he ever contributed enough. This feeling that he was more technical than a Gerrard or a Lampard, that English football couldn't appreciate a calibre, the technical ability of a player of a Michael Carrick, I think is a load of nonsense. He was a very nice, tidy footballer who had a great range of passing and played a key role in a very good Manchester United side, but not everybody needs to be a great.
Is he better than Jordan Henderson?
I think I don't think he's as important to his team as Jordan Henderson. I don't think he was as important, anywhere near as important to that Manchester United side as Jordan Henderson is to this Liverpool side. Skill-wise,
is he better footballer?
Maybe he is. Maybe he is more talented. Maybe he has a better range of passing. But I think what Henderson gives to Liverpool and the way Jurgen Klopp wants to play is far more important than what Michael Carrick brought to that Manchester United side. And even in terms of the leadership that Henderson brings to that Liverpool side, never got the sense that was Carrick in United.
Yeah.
He must have thought when he got this job and somehow survived that, just get through day one, keep the head down, nothing too controversial, we'll just move on until the next interim manager comes in. And then Paul Scholes rocks up in BT last night and just chops the legs from under him before the game has even started.
Well, that's Scholes, he's being stupid. Right, that was an idiotic. Oh, they all should have resigned. Who was going to manage the team last night? Were you going to promote somebody from the youth team to take the team last night, and like really make the search for the interim manager chaotic? What was his plan? Like, so when did Solskjaer officially go? When was the announcement came the day after
Sunday?
Right, and there was a game on Tuesday that they had to travel to get to Spain. Who was going to pick the team? Were they going to make it maybe the subscribers to the app? There was going to be a vote on the app. What does Gold want? It was ridiculous. Absolutely.
Well, maybe
ridiculous.
Darren Fletcher, who's not on the training ground every single day, is a little bit removed from the
not on the training ground
management.
Hasn't
team.
Seen any of the attitude on a day-to-day basis of the players. Doesn't actually know what they're trying to do or what they're trying to achieve. It made absolutely no sense.
Is the problem?
Soundbite.
Carrick and McKenna are responsible for what they're trying to do and what they're trying to achieve, and that's why it's been this massive failure so far this
maybe,
season.
Maybe, but they did all right last night. You know, they made themselves slightly separate. They picked Donny van de Beek in a big game for, okay, so he was picked in a big game in the Champions League before, and the red card meant that he didn't get his full opportunity to show exactly what he was capable of. They dropped Bruno. That hasn't happened very much. I don't know. I think Scholes has been fairly stereotypical curmudgeon Scholes, and he was wrong. And then ultimately the game was won last night.
Wasn't that a bit weird though? Like seeing the entire team just without Solskjaer on the sideline? Like, I mean, obviously, you're right in terms of the timing of it. You didn't have a lot of time to turn this thing around, but in an ideal world, would you not have had somebody else lined up and get the whole crew out of there?
Football is an old boys club, right? And has stereotypically, what we've been used to is the manager comes in and brings his mates with him because nobody on that coaching staff is ever going to challenge him. So that's what all the great managers do. Oh, they get all their own coaching staff in. Why is that? Why do we assume that that's the only way of doing business, as opposed to actually saying, these are people who we know, who we've invested in, who we've built up over a long period of time, and who we think are very good coaches. The manager's going to come in and set the culture and tell them what they're supposed to be doing in terms of the structure of the training or what the philosophy of the training is supposed to achieve. Like, there's this automatic kind of, you bring your mates in and everything's going to be grand and we'll pay them whatever you want to because you've got us over a barrel. Like,
It quite often works though, doesn't it? You bring in a top class manager, you get his backroom team with him who have worked with them in a previous
because footballism
bit.
Is, as we see, it is one of the worst run industries where there are literally tens of millions wasted, pissed up against the wall for no specific reason other than that's how we do things in football. And there's no science. There's no science behind any of this.
What's your point, Jared? You should be able to separate McKenna and Carrick, that this was all Solskjaer's fault and the coaching staff. Maybe we're actually geniuses in the background who are being held back and hampered by Solskjaer.
But it doesn't have to be binary like that, Nathan. Like, they don't have to have been geniuses. They might just be as good. They might be interchangeable with loads of other coaches, except actually they're employees of the club. And I think Scholes was completely wrong. And I think the result bore it out, but I thought he was completely wrong beforehand. What the hell did he want? What did he want? He wanted a public sacrifice to feed his anger. And it wasn't enough for him that Solskjaer was humiliated the way he was. And, you know, he deserves to be because that's the game, that's the role, and he got amply paid for it. So I thought it was a ludicrous point from Solskjaer, from Scholes.
But, like, is it not reasonable to think that you can blame the last couple of years on more than just Solskjaer? Like, is that not his point? That actually,
yeah, the players,
entire, the entire coaching staff,
and the players,
you can't just get rid of the players. Like, I mean,
well, so how do you punish them? I don't know. I think this is a small tangent, right? But I do think that, like, it's grand for former players to say what they want and to do the punditry, and that's what we want them for. We want them to say ridiculous stuff like this because ultimately we end up talking about it. But it is ridiculous. That doesn't mean I enjoy the fact that he is ridiculous in this instance, right? And, like, that's fine. It's entertainment pre-match, but he was completely wrong.
I'm not sure.
You can't absolve Carrick or McKenna from blame for what's happened.
I didn't absolve them from blame, but I'm saying that, like,
but surely they have to take the same punishment as Ole Gunnar Solskjaer does.
Well, maybe the new manager is going to come in and they will also have to be compensated. But in the meantime, who was going to run things last night? It's a massive, massive game.
No,
you stick Fletcher in, who hasn't actually been at the training sessions week in, week out. Maybe he has been. Maybe Fletcher is at every single training session. I don't know. But I'd say Scholes doesn't know either. Like, and did he didn't even say, oh, put Fletcher in. He didn't say that. He was like, just get rid of everybody. They should have been so embarrassed by it. That's my point. We should move on. But go on.
No, that's fine. I'm not that passionate about this at all.
I just think
do an exit interview, Jer. Basically, is what I would suggest. Just get all their information and then say, we'll pay whatever you want.
And who would pick the team?
Well, obviously, as I said, I think that in the context of him getting sacked a couple of days ago, it's Fletcher, right?
Who's going to run over to the fourth official? Is Fletcher going to do all that? Who's going to talk to the goalkeeper pre-game? Who's going to kick the ball out in and out to the goalkeeper in the warm-up?
I honestly thought on Sunday that there might be a possibility that Paul McShane might have a involvement, considering he's there with the 23s. That actually just a natural little step up for Paul McShane.
Well, maybe he'll end up working with Pochettino.
Possibly. If only Pochettino had a reason to be in Manchester this week.
I mean, do you think they just called over to the hotel, succession style, through the laundry
chute? Secret
chute?
Entrance, yeah.
Like, they are, right? If they're not doing that, they're doing something wrong. There must be a blacked out Chevrolet, which is in the underground car park, and they're just having a little chat going, do you like us? We like you. We really, really like you. Do you like us as much as we think you like us? They must be, right?
There's got to be a strong possibility this whole Pochettino story is just massive spin for Manchester United to show their weight and show that, well, Mauricio Pochettino would be willing to walk out on Messi, on Neymar and Mbappe mid-season because Manchester United are a truly great club. Not this new money of Paris Saint-Germain. We are a club that are bigger than everybody else, and even Messi couldn't keep him there. But actually, Pochettino's thinking, nah, I'll wait till the summer. I ain't walking on this project right now. And in the background, they're getting Ernesto Valverde.
That was left field. Mm. I'm interested in the thought process that brought them to Ernesto Valverde. I think that's just progress. Yeah. You know? Like, it's better than Steve Bruce. Better than Mark Hughes. It's not as good as Wenger. I mean, it's just not as good as Wenger. Would have been the most trolling, interesting development ever. Although, he's exactly what they don't need right now with his laissez-faire. You guys go out and play. I'm not going to discipline anybody. Why would I do that? Life is too short. I don't know much about Valverde's style of play or how much of a disciplinarian he is. I know he was successful.
I think his outlook on life, Nathan, like, correct me on this, is a romantic one, more so than anything else. Whether or not that's actually replicated in his training ground methods, I'm not sure, because there was a big piece done with him in The Guardian during the summer with Sid Lowe, and the hook for the piece was Valverde releasing his own photographic collection, which was all football photos. So I'm not sure that he take them as he was coaching or as he was actually moving through his professional football life anyway, but he had this exhibition of photos taken of fans essentially outside grounds and the passion that exists in football.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Like he says, fans don't go to games to watch, they go to participate. I mean, that's something that could go down well with Manchester United fans. La vida a lo bestia, he says. Roughly, life only wilder, exaggerated, is his phrase about his photography tour.
Like, isn't it true, though, that he could actually wander unmolested through football fans in every country and people wouldn't go, oh, that's for Valverde?
100%. Really? 100%. Like, I mean, and like the CV is good. Like, I mean, with his Athletic Bilbao, you could say he overachieved. He got Espanyol to UEFA Cup final. I think was he the last manager to have Barcelona at the top of La Liga as well? And maybe Liverpool is just this moment where, I mean, a couple of things go different over the course of those two legs, and maybe it's not a complete catastrophe in the context of his career. So I'm like, as you say,
only the same thing happened the season before.
Well, good point, I guess. But
it is that strange Spanish scenario for a manager where he absolutely dominates La Liga for the couple of years he's there, like goes on these mad unbeaten runs domestically again and again and again, wins back-to-back titles comfortably, but just two absolutely calamitous exits from the Champions League or what he's probably best remembered for.
Wouldn't they bite your hand off now for that?
Well, the way he talks about the game and attractive football, and it might fit in perfectly with the Manchester United way between now and the end of the season, he feels like he's just slightly too big a name for the interim role.
Well, isn't that interesting? Yeah.
He may, if it were to go well, end up
getting the gig,
having to give him the job on the permanent basis.
Yeah.
Well, is that what they want? Like, if they appoint Ernesto Valverde, does everybody in the boardroom put their feet up for 3-4 months and say, well, let's see how this goes, and Maurizio, we'll give you a shout in February, March, and if we need you, we'll take you, rather than, like, this is definitely happening next summer?
They keep getting hammered by the Man United fans that I follow on Twitter and just generally have been chatting to over the last couple of days about, oh, they don't have a clue what they're doing. And in fairness, they don't. We have established that. But to try and get your way out of this by just sticking Carrick in until the end of the season, that didn't seem like the right thing to do either, right? Like, I think finding an interim manager of that standard, that's pretty interesting. Like, that will certainly make everybody go, this guy might have a chance of getting the gig in the long term. So I can't just phone it in for 4 months. And we can't tank to get rid of him because, well, the hierarchy are going to see that we tanked. And also, we need to play Champions League football next season. And I'm sure they're bonused accordingly. So it's just the right amount of... I think you're right. And I don't think that's a bad thing when it comes to negotiating with Pochettino or whoever else they might be interested in the summer. It's like, well, take it, don't take it. You can't demand everything. This is the money. This is your backroom team. This is the transfer budget. That's it. We've got it. We've got a great manager who has turned things around. You know, like, they at least give themselves some opportunity to get out of this without looking like the complete idiots that they've looked like for the last decade.
It could become Manchester United's version of Goose Hiddink, the guy who, when we sack our manager, comes in for 4 or 5 months, who understands what Manchester United supporters want, good attacking football. But also, we all in agreement that, like, this ain't your gig forever. So
maybe it turns out to be Adam Grant, though.
I think you need a Jose Mourinho before you can get a Goose Hiddink. Like, you need a, or at least a track record of Jose Mourinho's, or someone who's going to bring you titles. Like, the one thing from yesterday as well is, like, are we sure that Pochettino has kind of, like, said no to this initially? Like, I mean, so everybody's on the same page here. Like, I mean, he obviously said all the right things. Like, I'm happy at Paris Saint-Germain. I have a contract until 2023. But, like, this quote, like, football is today. Football is not tomorrow. There is nothing in tomorrow. Of course, the club need to plan and we need to plan. And we are working and thinking always about what is going to happen tomorrow. But football is about results. Like, I mean,
it's a James Bond movie title, isn't it?
It is. He's kind of thinking in the back of his head, should I just go? Like, he's weighing this up in the back of his mind. And he's clearly not overly happy, not overly delighted to be at Paris Saint-Germain. So that thing could still happen. But if Valverde comes in and does a really good job to the end of the season, that's not an interim, is it? Assuming he's happy to take the job on a longer term basis. If he impresses over the course of these next 5-6 months, he gets the job beyond the summer, doesn't he?
I don't know.
I think probably. Unless they publicly come out and in February or March and say they've come to an agreement, or Pochettino gets sacked after Paris Saint-Germain get knocked out in the last 16 of the Champions League, and they decide to make a change.
If Valverde was to do a Roberto Di Matteo here, right, and win the Champions League, hard not to give him at least 3 or 4 months next season.
It's a banker at that point. But, like, here's the thing: if he has a good season over the course of the next 5 months,
what's a good season?
But Michael, say he manages to break into the top three in the Premier League, for example, and Liverpool, Chelsea, or Man City finish behind them. From this juncture, I think it's a good spot, and also a European run, maybe quarterfinals in the Champions League.
Nah, I don't think that gets you the job. I think
semi-finals?
The only way you get the job is by winning.
Winning it? Okay.
Winning the Champions League.
I was just about to say that if Carrick and Valverde, if they're both put on the two different tracks and they both achieve the same thing, I think there's probably more of a tendency to give it to Valverde permanently than it would be to give it to Carrick, because there's just an exotic nature to Valverde coming in.
I think if Michael Carrick won the league and the Champions League, they would still struggle to give it to him just because of what happened the last time. Like, it's obviously
not just an exotic nature to Valverde. As you said, you just went through some of Valverde's vast like experience. He's managed
an uninterrupted coach for 20 years.
He's won La Liga twice. He's got the Champions League semi-finals. He's been 3-0 up after the first leg of a Champions League semi-final. You're not comparing like with like when you're comparing him with Michael Carrick.
Yeah,
again,
fair.
The only reason you would ever think of giving it to Michael Carrick was he was a somewhere between grand and great midfielder for Manchester United 7-8 years ago.
Which is
exactly what they have just done.
Understands the Man United way, though, Nathan. It's very difficult for other people who have never experienced that on a day-to-day basis to know what that way is. It's obviously... it's like Sanskrit or one of those ancient languages that only the academics who have studied and have 15 degrees and 4 PhDs can actually get to the bottom of. Us mere mortals who are outsiders, we are on the outside of that giant flapping tent pissing in. And Michael Carrick is pissing out at us.
Well, unless they go to Stamford Bridge on Sunday and beat Chelsea 3-0 and suddenly Valverde's put in hold, Pochettino's put in hold, and wow, Ole was holding this genius on the sideline back.
We'd all be feeling the warm springs of Michael Carrick at that point.
We should...
We should
talk about Chelsea in 1 second. OTBAM live with Gillette, proud sponsors of Movember. Gentlemen, let's mow. It's a highly caffeinated trio you have with you this morning at 7:48. Here's what's coming up between now and 10 o'clock. Keith Wood's going to be joining us at about 10 past 8 this morning. Philippe Auclair will give us the lowdown on the managerial merry-go-round that has to happen. There are a few more moving parts here about Zidane. Previously, we all expected Zidane to stay out of football until after the next World Cup. was over, and then he would just swan in and take the France job for 4 years. But that might not happen. Conor McManus, Monaghan Football, are going to join us at 8:50. Jess Kelly is going to give us a gift guide at 9:10 this morning. And loads more coming your way, including Brian Kerr talking about his love of St. Pat's ahead of the cup final this weekend. Now, let's talk Chelsea, right? Very quickly, some comments, though. Jack Reaper on YouTube says, Scholes is just bitter. Crankiest man in football. Jose brought in Carrick and McKenna, just FYI. And Celtic Warrior on YouTube points out, that was Moyes' problem at United. He got rid of all the backroom staff. I do think that there's probably a bunch of those players, or a bunch of that backroom staff, who do stay with the new manager in some role, because it looks like that's what Manchester United want to do in the future. Bonnie Hammer on YouTube says, a manager has to have his own backroom staff. Yeah, he'll have some, but not like backroom staffs. When you think about the size of a backroom staff that the Tipperary hurlers or the Galway hurlers or the Dublin footballers are going to have, is Pochettino travelling with a crew of 20? He isn't. There is like a backroom. There is a
he has his little pal.
Yeah. There's a permanent staff. He has a little pal and maybe one other little pal, and they go off and they do their little jaunts together, and they head the crack, and that's the inner sanctum. But everybody else is there making sure that the cones are in the right place.
Jesus Perez is his little pal, by the way.
Is it? Baby Perez.
Baby Jesus.
Virian on YouTube says, Jupp Heynckes at Bayern as interim won the treble and then was replaced by Pep. That was
won the Champions League, yeah. Yep.
Jupp Heynckes. I'd say Jupp is like Pep the genius. Huh? Mm. No, not so much of a genius now. Couldn't do it. Couldn't get the job done. Right. And Gary Egan says, love the show, guys. Thanks very much for that, Gary. Right. Let's talk about Chelsea. Last night,
when they're very, very good.
Yeah. Timo Werner scored last night, Owen.
Yeah.
Owen's been banging the Timo Werner drum since last season.
Yeah, this is,
he's going to come good. This is it. This is his bold, brave prediction at the start of the season. And last night, you know, good man to tap one in at 4-0.
Yeah, and at 95th minute. No, the Timo Werner take was very much a thinking out loud moment that just never made it to air. But my take, Nathan, was that there's a possibility that Werner could actually have a better season than Lukaku as the year went on. This was, what was the last game before Lukaku got injured in the Premier League? Do you remember he hit the post a couple of times and Werner ended up scoring, did he, in that game? And I was like, you know what, he's going to be picking up the pieces a lot more this season. Obviously he proceeded to get injured at the exact same time as Lukaku a couple of months ago, so his progress has been stalled. But they certainly have options, you can't really deny that up front, but it is possibly the weakest area when you're looking at that goal scorer when Lukaku's out, because the rest of the team looks awesome at the moment.
Yeah, but like, Lukaku costs 100 million, and your backups are still Timo Werner, Kai Havertz, Christian Pulisic, Ziyech, Hudson-Odoi. You just play in a slightly different way, as they have done. So I think, if anything, they have better backups than anybody else in pretty much every position. Like, watching them last night, and Chilwell and James looking like two of the best wing backs in world football. Like, Marcos Alonso was probably the best right left back in the Premier League for the first 6 weeks of the season and hasn't been seen for the last month. And Ben Chilwell comes in and does even better. Cesar Azpilicueta doesn't put a foot wrong. You know, great defender, plays the first 6-7 games, hasn't been seen for the last month. Reece James comes in, scoring goals, contributing, looking like one of the best right backs in English football. And they seem to have that in every part of the pitch. Like, I watched them against Leicester at the weekend. Can't really remember what the starting 11 was or who the substitutes were when they came on, because there's this constant flow of changing and it doesn't really make any difference who it is. They seem to be able to perform to the same level, and it does feel as though it puts them at a different level of consistency to both Liverpool and Manchester City. I think Liverpool and Manchester City's best might well be better than Chelsea's best, but they look like a team who are just going to win a lot of games against the, I won't say the lesser opposition, but everybody else. 2-0, 3-0, no fuss, everybody fresh all of the time. And like, those players who scored the first three goals last night, all coming from the academy, the team last night, Chalobah from the academy, Reece James from the academy, Hudson-Odoi from the academy. You even look around the Premier League, Billy Gilmore's obviously gone to Norwich and may now get a bit of an opportunity under Dean Smith. We know how highly everybody rates Billy Gilmore at 18. Conor Gallagher at Crystal Palace, one of the best players in the Premier League so far this season, on loan from Chelsea. They've got 100 million quid in the summer for getting rid of three more players from the academy. Like, it just seems to be a never ending conveyor belt of talent at Chelsea at the moment, and now that they have the right manager as well, it's pretty frightening what they could do over the next few years.
Yeah, it's I mean, it would be pretty amazing if they'd kept some of the players that they have let go. You suspect they'll get better at scouting their own team and making sure that they don't let world-class players go into the future, or if they do go, that there are buyback clauses inserted for the likes of Salah or De Bruyne or whoever.
Well, they've even done that this year. So Livermento at Southampton, the right back, who the brilliant, who I don't think anyone had ever really heard of. He hadn't played for Chelsea's first team. They put in a buyback clause for him. So they're obviously trying to do that. And even, like, I thought of all their centre halves last season that Tomori would be the one that would kick on and progress to the first team that they want to keep. But they sold him to AC Milan. You'd have to assume they put in a buyback clause there as well. Like, he's still a very young player. So you'd imagine they're pretty smart with these things now.
Is there, like, I mean, kind of being uber devil's advocate here, because I buy what you're saying. I know Joe maybe isn't drinking the Kool-Aid in Chelsea just yet this season fully to the level that we are, but like just thinking about what could go wrong from this season, everybody knows exactly where Chelsea are going to hurt you at the moment. Now, they're pretty powerless to do anything about it when you've got those wing-backs playing like they're playing, but it is pretty obvious where they are going to hurt you. They are going to be their most potent attackers at times, especially when Lukaku is out injured. They're going to have the two midfielders that sit deep, the three at the back. There is clearly a Tuchel game plan that is going to be the game plan next weekend, next month, and all the way through till the end of the season. If there comes a point when that gets figured out, even just a little bit, it could be a situation where in a big game they do get figured out and they do fall away a little bit. That's the one thing that I could see potentially happening to them. Maybe not over this season, Nathan, but maybe over the course of the next couple of seasons.
Possibly, but like, look what they have in midfield, Kante and Jorginho and Kovacic, all of whom have raised their game massively since Tuchel came in. Like, they can overpower you in the middle of midfield. Just went through the attacking options, whatever rotation of those 6-7 players that they have, that even if they don't go with the wing-backs, even if they don't go through the wing-backs for absolutely everything, that they still have enough individual talent up front that somebody is always going to be able to create opportunities. Now, maybe the fact that they don't seem to ever really know what their best 11 is means that there is an opportunity for some inconsistency along the way. But yeah, the wing-backs have been absolutely vital. And like, Chilwell gets injured last night. You're not really in any way concerned because, you know, Alonso can come in at the weekend for the game against Manchester United. He tends to generally play very well against Manchester United. And but they are key to everything he wants to do. But I think the rest of the team is so strong as well. Maybe could you question the defence? I know Thiago Silva was brilliant last night. Christian, Rudiger, Chalobah's come in.
They'll be grand. They're good enough to be like, grand.
Well, exactly. As I said, I still think that Liverpool and Manchester City have the ability to go on a run of being at their very, very best, and Chelsea may struggle to keep up with that, but like, they haven't really shown that consistency, Liverpool and Manchester City, over the last year or so, whereas Chelsea, since Tuchel has come in, they have.
One of the reasons I was a little bit sceptical was that I wasn't entirely convinced that Lukaku is like anything other than a flat track bully. I think he's a very, very good striker at that level, and there aren't a million of those strikers around, but actually, if you were to continue the pace of development that the forward players at Chelsea have and not play Lukaku ever, I think they're a more difficult team to manage against. There's loads of games you'll play Lukaku, he'll score twice, you'll win 2-0. But in those bigger games, like, would Man United, okay, maybe not Man United, would Liverpool or Man City really be able to deal with Lukaku? I think they probably will. But will they be able to deal
with...
Well,
they have. Will they be able... The games that have happened this season already.
Well, I mean, so into the future, right? Over the next couple of seasons, when you're looking at the evolution of Chelsea, the point you're making at the moment is that the very best, the highest level of City and Liverpool is higher than the highest level of Chelsea. And it felt like they weren't going to get to that same level if they were to put Lukaku in that side and then suddenly become quite a formulaic side who play to Lukaku's strengths. But if they have Kai Havertz and Pulisic and whoever else doing Havertz and Pulisic things and getting better at that, then I think that's more difficult to manage against and to prepare for into the long term than a very stereotypical English style centre forward that Lukaku is.
Or even just kind of like to add to that, is there sort of a different version that of a team that Lukaku fits into to get the best version out of Lukaku? It may not necessarily be the best version of the team for Chelsea, but if you look at, say, Conte at Milan last year, at Inter last year, it was Martinez playing alongside Lukaku. And that's kind of why I was excited about Werner at the start of the year, because I thought with Lukaku as the foil, he could have an explosive season. But it doesn't look like Tuchel might go for that just yet. And if he does, Werner will be playing kind of behind him in one of the almost an attacking midfielder position. That it does seem he's more likely to go with like Havertz and Mount and attack alongside Lukaku than his classic buddy cop system up front, which would have got the best out of Lukaku last season, for example. And I just wonder, is he going to be a bit isolated in this Chelsea team and maybe not produce the massive attacking returns that he produced at Inter over the past little while?
Well, he hasn't so far. That game against Liverpool was a repeat of his performance for Manchester United a couple of years ago, where Van Dijk didn't have to even tackle him. He just couldn't get himself involved in the game. Their performance against Manchester City was probably their worst of the season so far, and Lukaku started both of those games. And you're right, that is trying to figure out those pieces of the attacking positions. Like, how do you play Pulisic, who I think is maybe the best of all the attackers, how do you play him and Mount, the best of all the midfielders, in the same team if Lukaku's there as well? So maybe there's just enough rotation that everybody's kept happy all of the time. But when Lukaku was fit, he was playing every single game, and you're suddenly trying to keep Pulisic happy, Ziyech happy. Hudson-Odoi I don't think seems to be particularly happy when Lukaku's there, because he's not getting his game at all. So like, maybe that is the one area where you're right, that if Lukaku's playing all the time, is it actually taking something away? But then I think that flat track bully against everybody outside the top six will work just fine for Chelsea and Romelu Lukaku. It's a hard thing to do, though, if he's scoring goals against them,
to leave him out and
not
the
play
League
him in the biggest games.
Yeah, it is. And so that's like, I mean, we are nitpicking here because we have three very, very, very good teams in the Premier League. There are inconsistencies in Liverpool in particular that I must be maddening for Klopp to get out of, because his team is definitely capable of playing the best, most explosive periods of matches. You can see Man City being the best for 90 minutes, but you can still see Chelsea winning the title by virtue of the fact that they just beat all the teams who you're supposed to beat, and then they do well enough in the other games over the course of the season to break even or just be a little bit behind, and away you go, game over, right?
Yeah, and that's sort of what's happened so far. We have weekends like last weekend where they just brush Leicester aside. Now Leicester obviously aren't what they were over the last couple of seasons, but suddenly both Liverpool and Manchester City are going into their games under a lot of pressure, because Chelsea have opened up a little bit of a gap. And if Chelsea go and beat Manchester United, which you probably expect they're going to this weekend, like, that pressure keeps ratcheting up on Liverpool and Manchester City, that they just cannot slip up. And that's the sort of title race we've seen in England consistently over the last few years, that if a team gets a run, it's very hard to stay with them, and they end up just sort of running away with the title. So Liverpool, as we know, in January are going to lose Mo Salah and lose Sadio Mane, and Manchester City still don't have a striker. So like, there's a huge opportunity here for Chelsea to go and get a nice little lead by the time we get into January, February.
Yeah, it's been interesting so far. If you want to get involved in the conversation this morning, 087-9180-180 is the WhatsApp number. You can always get us on Twitter at OffTheBallAM as well. AskNieres32, maybe it's a backward spelling or something, is it? It has to be on an interim basis. Get the lad you want in next summer. If Valverde does better, then, well, Newcastle will come looking for him if they stay up. I mean, having a Valverde in our lives after this is going to be good for us anyway, one way or another, right?
Why?
Well, it sounds like he's a good, interesting manager with a slightly different take on life. I mean, he's certainly more interesting than insert cookie cutter manager of any of the last six Watford managers, or any of the Chris Wilders of the world who flattered to the sea for 18 months.
Which do you think will be a more important factor in predicting Ernesto Valverde's success through the prism of the English media? Do you think it'll be 20 years of uninterrupted coaching where he has overachieved the likes of Athletic Club Bilbao and Espanyol, or the two games where he had a bad time in the Champions League, in which one of them was an English club involved?
If he gets beaten 4-0 at any point, then I suspect that the latter is right.
OTB AM
with Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's move.